Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Jim's in Maui, so he's out for this week. He'll be back with us next Monday. I'm sure he'll be fired up, ready to go after a couple weeks away from us and a week away out on the hanging out on a beach somewhere. So he'll be back next week, so it'll just be us today. NFL from yesterday. Almost two just horrific collapses by the Browns and the Cowboys, but they do hold on for big wins. Did the Bills
and Tampa Bay almost?
Well, let's say I'm on the other side of that game.
Okay,
did the Bills figure something out there? Even though they lost, but a frantic comeback. You know, they're down what 24-3 or 21-3 or whatever it was. I think 24-3.
Yeah,
and you're thinking to yourself, what? How are the Bills this bad? They're not. There's no way they're this bad. Maybe they figured something out, and we start to see that. Aaron Rodgers, he owns Chicago. And by the way, my preseason Super Bowl picks look better right now than they have at any point in the season. A couple of teams that everyone left for dead, looking pretty good. We'll get to that. Yeah, NCAA football this weekend. Hey, Bryce Young won the Heisman. Does anybody care? I've got some thoughts on why nobody seems to care. Navy beat Army for the first time in 7 tries, I think. That was fun to watch at the end. Not good news for anyone in this state, but don't look now. Texas is killing the recruiting trail. Have they been the team that has been helped out the most by all the madness with the coaching carousel? I think so. I think they're able to get some guys that they never would have gotten and didn't have committed to them until the coaching carousel started, and some of those guys from in-state were going out of state, and now it looks like they're going to stay. Plus, Quinn Ewers is headed there as well from Ohio State. Sarkisian's killing it there. Brent Venables landed his first recruit. We'll tell you who that is. The first commit of the Brent Venables era happened this morning. Then also high school hoops from over the weekend. We'll wrap up the 5-county. I'll tell you about how Elk City, Farron, and Jones and some other local teams had good weeks in tournaments all across the state of Oklahoma. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. It's 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the Paragon Communications app. That app has all things Paragon. It's got 3 radio stations. It's got the Penny News. It has Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. Is that we're winding down the pre-Christmas break portion of everybody's schedule. This week will be the end, and then we'll get geared up for January and that sprint to the finish that always happens in high school hoops. So you can watch all of that stuff right there on through the app. We've also got the Skinny on Sports podcast available on KADSAM.com or iTunes. And so if you missed the show entirely, you can go back and check us out there. What's up, Jared?
How you doing?
I am wonderful.
Good weekend?
It wasn't bad. I actually got to play golf. Really? On...
That's a good weekend.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I got to play golf on Saturday. It was super nice. It wasn't as warm as it's been, but the wind was pretty low. And it was fantastic. It was fun. And so that was a good time. Basketball on Friday. Saw some really good play for the Elks at times. The Elkheads kind of got snowed under by the defending 3A champs.
Well, hey, that's
still
a good
team.
That's a good team.
They lost. Yeah. Jones has lost some, but that's still a pretty fantastic team up there. And they just kind of swarmed the Elkheads early on. And there was really nothing that Elk City could do there in the middle couple of quarters. But all in all, it was a good weekend. What about you?
It was good. Mentioned basketball. Watched a lot of basketball Friday night. Saturday, went over to Sentinel and called a couple games and had a big gap between one game and the second game. So I was able to, you know, hang out and watch some pretty good small school basketball over there in Sentinel.
Yeah, I'm super interested in one of those games because I didn't see it coming the way that one of those teams blew through that bracket. I did see one of them coming, but not the other.
I owe you a burrito.
That is correct.
I was driving in, I was pretty hungry
this morning. I actually didn't stop.
You should have texted me. I was driving in thinking, what am I forgetting?
Oh, I don't need to text you and make sure you honor your bets.
I will. You know I'm good for it.
Oh, yeah.
I'll get you.
Let's wrap up the Five County. As when, you know, on Friday, when we went off the air Friday morning, there were still consolation bracket games to be played to get to that finals. And then, of course, Saturday, six games worth. On the, we'll just tell you how it went, and then we'll talk about what happened. Consolation bracket on the girls' side. Cheyenne Raiden beat Leedy 51-39, so Lady Bears are the consolation champs. On the boys' side, Canute Drowned and Cheyenne Raiden 70-40, so the Trojans are the consolation champs. Third-place games, girls, Arapo Butler got by Sentinel 47-33. Arapo Butler boys are also third-place winners as they beat Hammond 59-45. Then in the championship games, it was all orange and black throughout the week over at Sentinel as the Merritt Oilerettes topped Canute 46-40. The Oilers were 11-point winners over Sentinel 61-50. So both Merritt teams are the five-county conference champions this year. I'm not surprised that the Merritt Oilerettes were the champs. I think that, like I said last week, I thought they were the biggest favorite in either bracket, just with what they had coming back, the experience of last year. And then, quite frankly, the Hammond Lady Warriors not in the tournament. I think that would have been not that that's a guaranteed final. I'm not saying that, but I think there was a pretty good chance it might have been. And it'd be nice. It would have been a pretty good early season measuring stick for Merritt. Hammond's played more games because they got started about a month earlier. But either way, though, it's a Canute team that played well over there this week with wins over Leedy and Arapo Butler. Ran into the Oilerettes in the finals, and Merritt was able to win. You were there, so tell us how it happened.
It was that girls' game was like almost like the first time they played. It was tight throughout, and Merritt pulls away. They had a little run there in the fourth quarter that Canute couldn't overcome, and Merritt wins by six. I mean, they won by – I mean, the score was almost identical too. But, yeah, Merritt has that depth, and like you said, a lot of girls coming back, came back from a good team last year. I expect a deep run from them in the playoffs. But, man, Canute's Kylie Smith went crazy. I had her for 22. I don't know if that was official. But she started, and that's what they needed. They needed her to start aggressive to have a chance in that game, and she did. And the problem was everyone else was kind of cold from the field. And I said it at half. I said, you know, Canute was down three. And I said, it's going to take somebody to help Kylie out. She can't carry it. I mean, she could. I mean, she's that good of a player. But if they can get one more person to make some shots. And I thought that was coming. You know, Jade Gray is usually good for three or four from outside. Taylor Butler's usually good inside. They were both limited. No one else scored in double digits. And that's saying something about Kylie Smith when your team loses by six. She had 22 and no one else scored over 10. That's a special type of player right there. But kudos to Merritt, though. I mean, they played a heck of a game. And kudos Coach Doherty, you know, he threw them in like a hockey line, three or four at a time, just over and over and over. And that, you know, that's going to happen a lot to Canute with the limited bench, you know, with their depth limited. You're going to see a lot of rotation to try to, you know, keep fresh legs out there. But it was a fun game. And the Merritt boys, they're coming on, you know. Now they got some games under their belt. Look out for the Merritt boys, too.
Yeah, that's the one that maybe not, I guess, surprising. Just because, you know, you look down at the bracket, and they're probably the third seed going in, with Canute being the two and Arapo Butler obviously the one. But, yeah, there's something. I wonder what – I'd love to ask Coach Rogers or Coach Snowden, one of the two, because there's something about that matchup with Sentinel and Arapo Butler that Sentinel likes and Arapo doesn't.
I asked a Sentinel player. He was sitting by me on Friday before my game, and I kind of I said, you play for Sentinel? I said, yeah. I said, how do you have Arapaho's number? How are you beating these guys every time? And he just gave me the typical, just play hard and we hustle. And I was like, come on, man. Give me something
else. So does everybody else.
Yeah, come on, man. I was like, well, how do you do it? How are you beating these guys? And he just gave me that those cliche answers, that coach speak. But that maybe that's a good sign from a good coach, you know, just hammer it in their heads, you know, hustle and play hard. But then I asked him, I said, hey, you know how you beat Merritt? He looked at me. I said, you play hard, you hustle. But they, yeah, something, I guess it's, and sometimes it's just the X's and O's. Sometimes it's just how they match up, right?
That's right, yeah. And so after, you know, I think Arapaho was probably the favorite to win. And once Sentinel beat them again, which you kind of even thought, okay, you see that second round matchup coming when you look at the bracket. Okay, everything kind of favors Arapaho Butler in the second one, just for revenge, and after losing the only game they lost to that team, and Sentinel did it again. And so I was just, I guess, in my mind, kind of had already handed the trophy to the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Just because of that win. And then all of a sudden, I looked yesterday morning, I wonder who won, because I wasn't paying any attention to what time it was or anything on Saturday. And it's like, wow, I'll be darned, Merritt won. So how much of that game did you watch?
About a half before, because like I said, I was there all day, so no offense to Merritt and Sentinel, but I was just ready to get home.
Yeah.
But about a half. Merritt looked like they were in control, and I listened to them on the way home. They were in control for, the majority of that game, basically from tip to finish, having the double-digit lead and eventually winning by double digits. So that they, like I said, it sounds like now they got some games under their belt, and their only loss coming to Canoe. They're 4-1. They're kind of, you know, easing into it, you know, after a football season, and they could be going on a run too. So they look solid.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting to me that they were the winner. Like I said, I'm not surprised at all that the girls won.
I think what was more interesting to me was how they beat Hammond. How bad they beat Hammond.
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't back-to-back days like a lot of tournaments are.
Right.
But you have to think, you know, you had an extra day, but on Tuesday, you know, when Hammond beat Canute, you know, there's maybe that, you know, kind of feeling yourself a little bit.
Sure.
The worries, hey, look at us. Look at what we did.
Yeah.
And you know, just looking at it to me, I think the team that'll be kicking themselves is Canute.
Yeah.
Because of that first game there. You know, how does this bracket look differently? Or does it look differently? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe they run into Merritt. But, you know, you already mentioned the only loss that the Oilers have suffered this year came against Canute. You know, and so I think that's a team. Yeah, you win consolation. I don't think any of those guys care about that at the end of the day. You know, I think even though you take home a trophy, I think if there's probably just a little bit of disappointment.
The what
from,
if.
Yeah, from the Trojans.
Man,
just because,
what if we take care of Hammond? Yeah,
yeah, and then you play the team that wins the tournament that you've already beaten.
Yeah, no one's hanging a banner for consolation championship.
Nah.
They're hanging for, you know, you look in the Canute gym, and there's others. Say, if you win the five-county tournament, that's a big thing, and they'll hang a banner for that. And I was saying that Saturday night that typically a lot of the times when we see the champion of this tournament, that's really telling for us because for a success, it could lead to a successful season and better things to come in the playoffs. So I was really kind of hammering that in during the girls' games. Like, you know, this could be one of those turning point games for either squad. And, you know, listen, when you go to the five county, when you go 2-1 in the five county, I think that's saying something. You know, when you come out with a winning record, I mean, it's a tough conference. It's a tough, tough conference. You have to be ready for every game. I mean, no truer words were said when, you know, Canute, like you said, Canute and Hammond. You have to be ready because every game is going to be tough. It's a tough conference. It's one of my favorite tournaments. It is probably my favorite tournament every year. I'm glad we got it back this year.
Yep. So the Oilers and the Oilerettes win the five county. Be interesting to see when the rankings come out today exactly if this or how far this does push up those Oilerettes, because last year they ended up ninth in the rankings, mm-hmm. which, you know, they were the first team to have to they had to play two ranked teams in their area tournament, and it turned out they lost to both of them there in the area finals and then the turnaround – or the regional finals, I'm sorry, and then turn around in the consolation finals with Silo and Latta. So, you know, being able to sneak into that top eight makes you one of those teams, you know. And
sure.
So then it then eliminates, you know, maybe one another really good team out of an area coming up. I also think – something that's already popping into my mind about what's going on. It's been such a – the road to the big house in Class B for Leedy has been the same for how many years?
Yeah.
You know, you host a district, you host a regional, then you go to Woodward.
Right.
I don't know if that's going to be the case this time. Yeah, so now
– times are changing.
So does Hammond get that route?
Hmm.
You know that.
Yeah.
You start looking. You know, Duke is ranked in both boys and girls. I think Lakeba Sickles is in both. You could see those two with location being paired up mm-hmm. in an area. And then you look up. You got Lomego, which they could go east. And then you got Hammond and Arnett on the girls' side in the top eight. That makes a lot of sense. You know, for those two to end up there. We'll see. I mean, a lot of things will go into it between now and then. But something I was already thinking about of, you know, what's the road in that Class B for the Lady Warriors of Hammond? And, you know, a lot of times their road is south. Most of the time. I mean, about every time. Their road is, you know, through a Chickasha or through a Cache.
Right.
You know, because Leedy is both ranked, both in the top eight. That's not going to be the case this year, it looks like. And so, therefore... does Hammond get that road up north, and how much different is that for them with their prospects moving forward?
Yeah.
Just something to
I was thinking
to already
about that
thinking
too.
About.
Seeing after Leedy lost on Saturday, the girls, I thought to myself, man, they're probably going to have to travel a little bit for playoffs.
Yeah. So, I mean, think about where Hammond's been. You know, even in district was that last year where they went to the district, or a couple years ago, they had one in Cashin.
Yep.
And then area over at Cleveland. They've been to like Verdon and Chickasha.
I mean, a couple times Mountain View, they felt slighted because like, why are we going to Mountain View? We should be hosting and
that's
you know,
that's where I'm. You know, the boys may need to kick in a little bit.
They're gonna need a
little
from help
where
there.
They're at.
Yeah.
And so you know that's one thing. I mean, you knew regional is gonna be at Leedy because both of their teams were in the top eight. That was just a guarantee.
Sure.
Rightfully so.
I mean,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Not like they're
no. 100%
because they earned that. But
that's right.
Right.
100% earned it.
But now it could flip. Now Hammond could be protected a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe even if not the entire regional, maybe just a subsite.
Yeah.
For the first round, and then you know meet somewhere after that. It's just gonna kind of depend. But it looks to me when you kind of start looking. It feels like that could be their path could be a northerly path this year
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the southerly with the way that the Lady Warriors are playing so far this year. I mentioned Elk City. Went to Jones.
Yeah. I was watching some.
Boy, Elkhead.
I tuned in right at the wrong time for the girls game.
Yeah, they got ran over pretty good. Jones is fantastic. You know, they came in with a win over Dale.
Did they
already.
Return a lot?
They returned some, and they lost some. They lost a bunch of their size. Because last year they had three or four that were 6 foot.
Yeah.
Only Sophie Woodson, who's just a sophomore, she was the only one left that over 6 foot. They had two or three last year. I know for sure two, maybe even a third. But guard play is fantastic. They're all about the same size. It's funny because when you look at their roster – they have a couple of freshmen at the top. They have a sophomore or two at the bottom, and then all in the middle, it's 5'7" juniors. Every one of them is the same size and the same class, and they're good. They're pressure. You've got to be able to handle the pressure, and the Elkettes just couldn't. And you know, they just kind of got ran away from. The boys' game, Elk City played the best quarter of basketball in the second quarter that I can remember in a while.
Yeah.
It was 12-7 at the end of the first quarter. They were behind. They outscored Jones, 23-8 in the second quarter. take a 10-point lead into the halftime locker room, and that lead just kind of slowly dissipated in the third quarter. They still led going into the fourth, and for the first couple of minutes, they kind of held on to the lead, but Jones's pressure got to him. Landon Loud had a couple of steals and dunks on the other end. And then as he was a really good guard, maybe 6'3", could really handle it. And as the lead started to grow just a little bit for Jones, forced the Elks to get out of his zone, trying to man up on him, and they couldn't keep him in front. It was either him getting in the paint, scoring himself, getting fouled, or he had a couple of assists to a guy off the bench, Rowlett, who hit a huge three and had a couple of baskets off of passes. You know, as Loud broke down the defense, you know, people had to come and help, and that left other guys open. So it was one of those things that when Elk City was able to kind of dictate the pace and dictate the way the game was played, they're right there. But as soon as they had to try to man up against that guy, it was kind of sayonara, as they just could not keep him in front. But a really good performance. That second quarter was awesome for the Elks. I mean, it was just playing within themselves, getting great shots time and time again, up and down the floor. Defensively, they were good, only allowing those 8 points in that second quarter, and really kind of picking their spots to get out and run. And then also, you know, being able to take care of it and hold on to it and slow it down a little bit when they needed to do that as well. So, you know, that's stuff that...
Well, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like good things are coming.
Yeah, the Elks are 1-3, but it doesn't feel like it, if that makes sense. You know, they've kind of blew the game against Pampa the first night out with a bad second half where they just could not make a basket. Came back and beat a pretty good Garden City team on Saturday. Then against Clinton, they're right there with the Red Tornadoes with 2 minutes to go and turn it over a couple of times and leads to easy buckets on the other end. And Clinton beats him. And it was a similar thing here against Jones, except for it was more like 6 minutes to go in the fourth instead of two. And so the lead swelled out and you get beat by eight. But, yeah, it looks a lot better. And they just got to kind of figure it out, you know, how to close those games. On the girls' side, it's just the offense is super-duper inconsistent, man. If they can take care of it and get good shots, they can score some points. But there's times where it's just kind of helter-skelter out there and the ball turns over and leads to easy buckets on the other end.
I appreciated how you shot the Longhorn upside down, the logo upside down. I'm glad you chose to sit on that side of the court.
That was the only side where I could be up on that little catwalk where nobody was messing with us. And so, yeah, it was green, but it was definitely upside down.
It was definitely upside down.
Around the area, I mentioned Clinton. I think both of their teams ended up second in the Bethel tournament.
Yeah, I know the boys did.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the girls did too. Here it is.
Not seeing the score for the girls.
Yeah, they got beat by Prague. Or no, that's the boys. 47-45, the boys got beat by two against Prague. I know the girls lost the finals. They ended up second as well. Up in Moreland, Sayre, the Eagles were third. As the boys were third. The girls were fifth. As the girls lost the first round at Visine, then 1-2. Boys won, then lost to Texoma. Turned around and beat Moreland on Saturday. Ended up third. Maybe outside of Merritt, the team that was most impressive, Weatherford Eagles, the Lady Eagles. They went to Community Christian. They won that tournament. Can't remember who they beat the first round. They beat Bethany in the second round, and then in the finals, they beat Anadarko. So they win the Community Christian tournament.
A little preview there.
Yeah,
probably.
No kidding.
Something coming. Yeah.
You look around at the conference, the Western Conference that the Elk City Elks are in and the Elkettes. I'll tell you. I've got it pulled up right here. On the boys' side, number 2, number 4, number 8, number 11, number 13, number 14, number 17, and number 18.
That's the boys. Is Tuttle not in the
They were number 2. Girls, that was the boys.
Oh, that was boys. I'm looking at a girl schedule. I'm sorry.
Yeah, here's the girls. 1, 6, 8, 9, 10, 13. Da-da-da-da-da. That's it. So what I'm telling you is you see some good basketball.
I was looking for scores, and the Clinton boys, anyways. You know, they got Anadarko tomorrow, Tuttle on Friday, and then the Christmas break. They open back up with Weatherford, which you've seen. They're good. Then the Weatherford tournament, who knows who's in that? I mean, that's a murder's row of games right there.
Man, but here's the deal. It doesn't matter whose schedule you look at in that conference. It's all like that.
It's all going to be like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is super tough. But
that's pretty cool, though. I mean, the conference bunch of really
it gets
good
you
teams.
Ready. Well, last year the 4A final in the girls' side was Tuttle and Anadarko.
There it is.
You know,
yeah.
Weather for boys, they lost in the consolation finals in overtime to Anadarko, 58-57. They're young. I'm telling you right now, that Nixon dude can get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm anxious to see him.
He can get it. And so, a good week for most everybody in the first round of tournaments. Yeah,
about another week, and then, boom, Christmas.
It'll be Christmas, and then we can all enjoy the Hammond Lady Warriors, see what they can
that's
do.
That's it,
speaking
yeah.
of, speaking of Weatherford, that's the
that's
first
right.
round game, isn't it?
Yes.
Weatherford and Hammond.
That'll be fun.
Wish they'd just kind of meet and maybe hear and play.
I know.
All right, interesting college football weekend off the field mostly as Bryce Young becomes the first Alabama quarterback to win the Heisman Trophy. Alabama joins five other schools with back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners. Can you name those, Jared?
Well, OU,
one.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
USC is
two.
In there. And I can't remember what you said on Friday, so I can't remember.
Ohio State, because it was the same guy.
Right.
I think it was Yale. I think it was
answer.
Yale and Army.
Yeah, it's going back, but yeah.
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 Was and so Alabama joins that. You know what's amazing? Is that their fifth Heisman Trophy winner? They had Ingram, they had Henry, Devontae, Young. Is that it? Or did they have another one snuck in there somewhere?
I don't know.
They didn't have one till 2009. Mark Ingram was the first guy ever to win the Heisman Trophy from Alabama back in 2009.
Right, right.
And they've ran through,
they've gone through
a pretty
it, yeah.
good little stretch here of Heisman. I think it was four. I think it's those four because I saw another stat. Since 2008, Oklahoma and Alabama have half of the Heisman winners. And I think it was seven total. And, yeah, that'd be three for OU, four for Alabama. And those back-to-back. Here's my question. Does anybody care? You know – to
it
me,
so anticlimactic. Climactic.
Is it just
year.
Because the year was weird? I mean, it didn't really even feel like there was ever a favorite until the SEC title game. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I don't. Maybe for me, and you can say what you, but for me, it felt like. I mean, his numbers are off the charts when they start getting piled up at the end. There's no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost felt like okay, well. You know, you've got Bryce Young, who's the quarterback at Alabama. You've got C.J. Stroud, who's the quarterback at Ohio State. It's going to be one of those guys, best player on what turns out to be the best team. Stroud got beat by Michigan. Young pulled it out of the fire in Auburn. And voila, he's the winner. I would love to know how this vote changes if Bryce Young doesn't pull it out, doesn't make that 97-yard drive against Auburn. Does that change everything? I mean, are we looking at Aiden Hutchinson winning the Heisman? Is Aiden Hutchinson one of the best 5D defenders in the country this year, much less the best player?
Great question.
I mean, you look at what Will Anderson did at Bama defensively.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, if it was going to be a year that one of those defenders could win it, this could have been the year if that scenario played out where if Bryce Young doesn't, you know, if they get beat by Auburn.
But he still destroys Georgia, though.
But he still destroys
you know?
Georgia. You know, but what if he gets beat by Auburn and they come limping in and get beat by Georgia? This could be the year. Because there was, at that point, before the Iron Bowl, there was no clear favorite. I was sticking with Young because it's the quarterback of Alabama and they're the top two in the nation. Until someone knocks them off,
mm-hmm.
he was going to be my guy. It could have been the year that a defensive guy would win it for the first time in a long, long time. Could have been.
Yeah, it felt like to me that everybody was ready to give the award to C.J. Stroud.
Before
the Michigan game.
Yeah.
You know, and that was going to be his crowning moment to kind of seal it up. And then when that didn't happen, it was like, oh, my gosh, all right, who's next? Oh, well, here's Bryce Young on
there
the TV.
Is.
And even though, you know, even in the loss at A&M, he was good. And honestly, in the Iron Bowl, he was pretty good too. Even they weren't scoring a bunch of points, but he wasn't making a bunch of mistakes either. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, hey, they lost those games because of the quarterback. That wasn't the case. And then, of course, with the performance he put on Georgia, it was all over but the crying and the voting. I just don't – you know, I think about – and maybe it was because of who won it, but you think back to, like, how big a deal it was, say, in 2003 – when Jason White was winning, or in 2000 when Heupel was up for that trophy. Maybe it was just the euphoria of Oklahoma getting out of the dark days of Blake and Schnellenberger and even Gibbs a little bit in the 90s to return to more of a national prominence. But at the same time, it also felt like it was a way bigger deal, and it also felt like the group of people that could win that trophy was way larger than it is right now.
Yeah.
You know, right now it feels like the only people that have any chance to win the Heisman Trophy is one of the quarterbacks on one of the playoff teams.
Yes. That's why I
unless you're a Devontae Smith that has that unbelievable year.
Right. And that's what the betting favorite should always go into, I think, starting a season is who's going to be the best quarterback or the best – well, we'll start there. Best quarterback on one of the top four or five teams, that's going to be your Heisman watch starting the year, which I hate, by the way. It's like the rankings. Like, why are we doing a preseason ranking when it doesn't matter until the playoffs start? But same thing should be said about the Heisman. Why are we putting a Heisman watch? Why are we doing a – well, these are your Heisman guys. I mean, they did it with Rattler at the start of the year, and look how that turned out. Wait until the season plays out. Then you go, hey, we're halfway through the season. Who's your Heisman favorite?
Well,
and then start talking about it. But I get it. You want to get the clicks and sell the subscriptions and all that stuff. I totally get that. But if you're going to do that, then it's always going to be the top quarterback on the top teams. Your QB1 on the top four or five teams. And that's why I always started with Bryce Young. That's why I started there because, well, it's Alabama. And you know they're going to wind up at the top at the end of the year, and if he just plays solid, if you commit to Alabama and you're just a solid game manager, you're probably going to get an invite to New York at the end of the season.
Yeah, and what was interesting is Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud were like in the top five preseason betting favorites just because of where they played.
Exactly.
Had nothing to do, but as it turns out, guess what? It was warranted.
Oh,
those guys were great.
Yeah, I'm not arguing who went there. I didn't have a problem with it. It was just really anticlimactic for me.
So the only – I was trying to think back. Okay, who won this? Who was there? So the last time that I can remember, and I'm sure I'll say this name and everybody goes, oh, what about that year? And that's fine. You could fire that in if I'm completely wrong here. But I'm thinking back. The last time I can remember someone winning the Heisman Trophy that was nowhere near, say, either a BCS title game or the college football playoff, Robert Griffin, right?
Yeah.
2011, his team lost like three or four games, and he won the Heisman Trophy. Since then, it's felt like just the same old with guys that are in the hunt. Like that almost feels like the starting marker for this award turning into best player on best team.
Yeah, you have to, if you want to be like RG3 or even Devontae Smith. No one really had him on the Heisman radar at the beginning of the year.
He wasn't even the best receiver on his team.
Right. You have to take it away from those favorites. You have to have that special season. And that's what I look for. You know, every time we do preseason stuff, and that again, I've told you how I pick my preseason Heisman guys, but that's what I look for is as the season goes on, like who is standing out, who is having that special season. And nobody really did this year I think the award was handed out to the right guy. You know, nobody really had that fantastic, whoa, look at that. You know, almost at Michigan State. Surprised he didn't even get an invite.
Yeah, Kenneth Walker. Stumbled in the biggest game there when they got just destroyed by Ohio State. Look at that. You know, Lamar Jackson in 2016, he wasn't necessarily around the playoff chase and won the Heisman.
Right.
Johnny Football, 2012, didn't even play for a SEC title. But he beat Bama. I mean, that's
right.
The
– you're mentioning those guys, and I was thinking about this as far as Bryce Young's concerned. Everybody has a quote-unquote Heisman moment. Was Young's just coming back against Auburn?
100%. Yeah. 97-yard drive to send that game into overtime and then win it? Yeah.
And we know RG3's was the touchdown pass against OU. Johnny Football was the
drop of the ball,
snap, scramble, and touchdown against Alabama. I mean, that helps.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so I was thinking about, what was his highest moment? Definitely Iron Bowl. But yeah. There's other guys that had Heisman moments this year. But the stats don't lie. Who you play for doesn't – I mean, definitely doesn't hurt. Right. And, again, I have no complaints with Bryce Young winning. I think he was very deserving.
Yeah, he was just –
it just wasn't exciting this year. Just wasn't exciting. And I think a little bit, but I'm speak for myself. I won't speak for you. But for me, there's no one in state that was really in the running. I mean, that became quite evident about two or three games in the season that Rattler's not going to be your guy. So, you know, especially after he got benched. And then there's that little bit of talk, well, man, if Caleb Williams could play like he did in the Cotton Bowl every game, he could probably get an invite to New York, but maybe not win it. But that'd be a heck of a story. But then he kind of tapered off. But so that definitely was another reason why I didn't think it was very exciting because, well, I'll be honest with you, there wasn't a Big 12 guy really in the conversation.
No. Text on the – Drew's right here. So if Sue didn't win it as a defensive player back in 2009, nobody's going to win it.
Who won it? No.
Mark Ingram.
I'm sorry, you're right. You just said that earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was so dominant.
If he was playing this season like that, I mean, would a guy like that would have won it?
I don't know because – The problem for some of these defensive guys is what you said to begin this. There's no preseason hype for it.
No.
And so you've got to build it and build it.
Nobody knew who Sue was starting the year.
Not really. I mean, for it to be a guy that good, you didn't really know about him. I mean, he played at Nebraska in the Big 12, and it was like, who?
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, he's throwing Landry Jones around like a child. In the 5-interception game up there in Lincoln that OU lost, and then the Big 12 title game against Texas was just one of the best defensive performances by one guy you'll ever see. But the problem is, it was too late. Like if he comes back the next year and does that, now you've almost for those defensive guys, you've almost got to have two and a half years worth of being able to build your profile up. And the thing is, that's going to be very rare for a sophomore to do or a freshman to do. So if you're that good, you're only staying three, you know. So you got to start the campaign has to start either at the end of your freshman season or the middle of your sophomore year to be able to be even any kind of viable candidate as a junior.
Right. Yeah.
Oklahoma got a commitment this morning from Nick Evers. Quarterback down in Flower Mound, Texas, 4-star. He's 10th rated quarterback on 247's list. First commit of the Brent Venables era. He was committed to Florida, backed away from that commitment when Dan Mullen was fired. And now, so Jeff Lebby and Brent Venables able to hook him in to becoming a Sooner. Everything's going to be official. I guess Wednesday is when the first signing day happens. That's great. But, man, look at Texas. Texas is dominating the end of the recruiting cycle here, especially in the Midwest or Southwest. And I said it at the first of the show, to me, Texas is the team nationally, locally, whatever you want to say. They are the ones that have gotten themselves the biggest benefit with what's happening on the coaching carousel at Oklahoma, at LSU, at Oregon, at Florida. They've been able to – some of these guys that were in-state guys that wanted to leave – have now turned around and came back home and are going to stay and play for the University of Texas. Kelvin Banks is one of those guys, 5-star offensive tackle, committed to Oregon. As soon as Cristobal leaves Oregon, he's wide open, bam, going to be a horn. Cam Williams, same thing. Duncanville offensive tackle. And then last night the news broke of Quinn Ewers, the million-dollar NIL baby that went to Ohio State for 1 year, is now coming back, and he's going to be a horn as he's transferring back to his home state of Texas to play for the Longhorns. You know, he was the number one recruit in last year's class as a dominating quarterback out of South Lake Carroll. So Sarkisian, at least off the field, on paper, is building that thing back the right way recruiting-wise.
But is
here.
It the same story, different coach? You saw
we'll
Herman
out.
Get some guys on campus, but there's the knock has always been, can they develop them?
That's
you
right.
You know, can they develop these guys? So we'll see. So, you know, all that talk about should Sark be fired, especially after the Kansas loss, not making a bowl, yada, yada, yada. I said I don't think – you got to give the guy a chance. You got to give this guy some time. He inherited a program. Now let him build a program, and he's definitely doing that. But let's see if he can develop them. And my second question is, what does Thompson do? Is he going to stay there and fight for his job now that Ewers is coming? Or, you know, everyone's so quick to hit the portal. Keep an eye on Newcastle's Casey Thompson. Where's he going to go if he decides to leave?
I think it'll be super interesting to see what Ewers is. Is he Tate Martell? If you don't remember him, he was a five-star quarterback that transferred all over the country and never even really got a foothold anywhere.
Right.
Or is this something that he is getting, you know, he sees the writing on the wall. I mean, if you go to Ohio State to be a quarterback and then C.J. Stroud has the year he just had and you look at, oh, wait a minute, we're the same grade? We're the same classification?
Right.
All right, I'm moving on. And, you know, Texas is a spot that, you know, you can step in and play right away. I mean, as good as Thompson was, it's part of the year, and a hand injury there toward the end probably affected a bunch of that. But if this guy's as good as the recruiting ranking was, then he'll step in, take that job, and have a couple of years to be the quarterback at Texas. And we'll see if that's the catalyst to get the Longhorns actually back, not just fake back,
right?
Not just in the offseason winning recruiting titles back, really, really back once we get around to September, October, November, and the season being started.
Yep. Off to a good start.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Good start for Brent Venables, too, getting that quarterback.
We'll see what happens. Some nice other guys. I think an interesting OU-Texas battle is going to be Kobe McKenzie, the longtime Sooner commit, flipped to Texas after Riley left. He is apparently on campus this week in Norman. Can they get him? Flip back around to the good guys. We'll find out. Wrapping it up on a Monday with some NFL talk. Boy, the Dallas Cowboys looked pretty awesome there in the first half, especially defensively.
Yeah.
And then got pretty hairy there toward the end of that game. Drew texted in earlier. He's like, I wish I knew what the identity of the Dallas Cowboys is. And it was funny because we came over here for lunch, watching the first half, and then when I got back in my car to go back home, I was listening to Brad, Cham, and Babe on the radio.
Right.
And Babe Laufenberg was making this exact point that Drew's talking about, because when you come into the season, the Dallas Cowboys look like, okay, they're going to put up 30 a game. That offense is high-powered, ready to go. Can they get enough defense to complement what the offense is going to be? And it kind of started that way.
Yeah.
But as the season has drug along, you know, injuries, Zeke isn't 100% healthy. That's obvious. Pollard didn't play yesterday. Offensive line has been kind of shuffling around with Tyron Smith in and out of the lineup. And, you know, Lyle Collins suspended. He comes back. He starts to gain a foothold. And then he gets kicked out yesterday punching somebody. You know, so maybe some of that is happening. Maybe even just if you talk about yesterday's game only, it was such a big lead at halftime, and Washington was doing nothing. Heineke was, what, 2 of 11 in the first half or something like that?
One point in the third, they only had like 40, or it was early in the fourth. They barely had 50 yards of
offense. That's right. And so if you're calling plays for Dallas, churn the clock. You know, don't lose the game on offense, and I'll be damned if they almost did. After the pick six that Dak threw, they're just inexplicable. Just threw it right to him. He clearly didn't see him.
He needs to
get
his eyes checked. I'm not sure he knew what color the jersey was supposed to throw to a couple of times.
He had some pressure right at him. Maybe he just literally didn't see the linebacker because of the
– that play was going out. Guy. I saw him too. Saw him. You know, when I get it, quarterbacks are a different view. I thought, I knew he looked wide open. I thought, but don't throw that.
Yeah, there's a guy right there.
He's right there.
Yeah. So it's – you know, but defensively they were good enough, you know. And one thing about the defense is this, they're starting to get guys back and get more healthy. You saw Randy Gregory make the huge play at the end of the game. Oh, by the way, Neville Gallimore back for the first time. He had a sack in which he just literally pushed the center into the quarterback, and I think that's a play where Heineke gets hurt, limps off the field a little, or the beginning of it anyhow. And so you know, that defense is getting more healthy. It's been one that's been opportunistic, but also had the ability to give up some plays. But right now, with the struggles offensively of the last couple of weeks, since maybe the Atlanta game, it almost feels like the identity is trying to shift to more of a defensive focus. And if that can be the case, with as good as the offense could possibly, you know, the weapons that they have, man, you're talking about a really, really strong team in Dallas if they're able to be able to shore up some of the defensive woes.
I think if you watch the game, you kind of got that feeling of how the flow of the game was going. Washington couldn't do anything. And Dallas kind of like,
don't screw it up.
Yeah, they're just kind of like, oh, let's just take our foot off the gas. Let's just get out of this game. They can't do anything against us. And then they came alive, and Dallas had to hold on. But you got to know that offense is capable of being very, very good, very, very, very explosive. It's worth noting that Pollard didn't play. You know, Zeke, he claims he's feeling really, really good. That's what the sideline reporter said. But, I mean, he did what he could, you know, at times, but without Pollard to compliment him, that kind of, I think, bogs down the offense a little bit. And you mentioned players back. You know, you had everybody on the field. You had Lamb, Cooper, and Gallup playing for the first time together for the first time yesterday. That's positive moving forward, and they got the equal share, too, of catches. So the offense will come alive, I think, when they get healthier. And they are each game after game, they're getting healthier and healthier. But man, that defense, though, how that started and how they look when they're healthy, holy moly.
It's funny because it reminds me a little bit, if you think back to Mike McCarthy's title in, 2010 with the Packers, that year started a little bit like Dallas's year, and they got a bunch of guys hurt through the middle of the season, and then all of a sudden, with 4 or 5 weeks left, they started getting guys back and started rolling things downhill, and you look up and you're like, wait a minute. Green Bay's damn good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Can Dallas be that? Yeah, Parsons.
Yeah, we've gone this whole time and not mentioned him.
Listen,
Holy moly. He's
clearly the defensive rookie of the year. There's a fair chance he's going to end up being the defensive player of the year. That dude is doing things that only like Lawrence Taylor has done.
Yes.
And guys like that, a Bruce Smith. I mean, when you see the tackles that he's made, the tackles for loss and the sacks all combined, those are the guys on the list with him. It's those all-time greats with the season that Micah Parsons is having.
I told you yesterday, Texan, I said it's come to the point when Dallas is on defense, I'm only watching 11.
Yeah.
I'm only watching him and only him just to see what he does, how he gets through the line, all that stuff. I mean, the dude is a special player having a special season.
It was pretty amazing, his versatility and his speed as well, because like last week, he starts out rushing the passer, has a sack, but Taysom Hill – he couldn't throw it last week, but he did kind of gash the Cowboys a couple of times, moving out of the pocket with his feet. So then you look up in the third quarter, and Parsons is just being the middle linebacker and spying him and not letting him go anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, they're just the he's an amazing talent, and that's what's going to have to happen for Dallas here in this next couple of year window, is while they have these guys, a CD, a Parsons, a Diggs, those types of guys on those low rookie deals, they're going to have to capitalize because of what they're paying Dak and then what they paid Zeke, and Amari Cooper's in that mold as well with the big time contracts. They're going to have to draft well and get above pay grade performances while these guys aren't making anything.
Yes.
And right now it looks like they're on the right track. I mean, look at that draft, the CD Diggs draft. My goodness, you got your starting center. You got one of the, you know what, top 10 or 15 receivers in the league. All or nothing corner that's only, you'd think would only get better. You know, that's a hell of a draft.
Yes.
And then you follow that up with Parsons and what he's been able to do. Whew. Things are looking up, but it's got to happen fast. That's the only problem. It's got to be in the next couple of years before those guys that you have drafted, it's time for them to start getting paid. Elsewhere around the league, I can't wait to see what the Bills do, because they were just getting ransacked 24-3, coming off that ridiculous performance against the Patriots on Monday night, where New England threw three passes and beat them, and they couldn't figure out a way to score in the red area or the 25-yard line and in. I think they were 1-for-5 that night, and just looked so out of sorts. And then all of a sudden, wham, here they come, send that game into overtime. They do lose, but they're right in the thick of it. Could that be, even in a loss, a way, do we see the Bills' season turn back around and they become what we thought they could? Because they're too good to play as bad as they played for those first
two and a half, three quarters.
Yeah, it was nice mid-game adjustments to come back and force that overtime. And does that mid-game adjustment turn into a season adjustment for them? Yeah, they're too good to, like you said. And I was thinking, holding on to that game, thinking when I was watching, thinking they're gonna come back, right? I'm not gonna turn this off. They've got it. They're too good to lose this bad, and they came back. It was a good effort from them. But listen, you got to score six there at the end and not tied. I'm sorry, you can't give. We've said it over and over. You can't give Tom Brady any extra time, even if it's an overtime. He's gonna beat you.
Yep.
And he did.
Yeah, he did. Aaron Rodgers still owns the Bears. I thought Justin Fields was awesome in that first half. That's really awesome.
Yep.
But Rodgers just, holy cow, four touchdowns, no picks. He was incredible. And Green Bay's defense shored things up a little bit. And you look back, I mean, the Jakeem Grant goes 97 yards on a punt return where nobody should have even caught that ball, and he takes it to the house. You know, it wasn't just defensive woes there for the Pack in the first half, but Rodgers did what Rodgers does. And then also, don't look now, Jared. I left my Super Bowl, my preseason Super Bowl picks in the toilet about 4 weeks ago.
Now you've fished it out of the toilet?
I fished them both out of the toilet because I had Kansas City playing San Francisco, and I'm fishing them both out. San Francisco has been rolling. They get that overtime win yesterday in Cincy. I think it's six straight. They had won four out of five going into yesterday. So they get that win. Now all of a sudden, 7-6. They won four of the last five after a four-game losing streak to start the season. So my San Francisco 49ers back in it.
Claiming them again, are you?
I'm claiming them. And I mean, look at their schedule. Falcons at home, that looks pretty easy. Texans at home, that looks pretty easy. Then they got at Titans, at Rams. So at 7-6, my San Francisco 49ers looking like they're in a pretty good spot for a wild card.
We'll see.
And the Chiefs, my God, they rolled the Raiders.
You know who they remind me of?
Who?
Tampa Bay of last year.
A little bit, yeah. Tampa didn't get quite to that level of despair
right.
that the Chiefs got to earlier in the season.
But I don't think Tampa, even though they had Tom Brady for that first year, no one had them as Super Bowl favorites like Kansas City was going in.
No.
You see what I'm saying?
I don't think so either.
So there's a lot of despair when they lose a few games. Like, oh, my goodness, the favorites.
Yes.
Well, now I talk about midseason adjustments. Now they've appeared to, I don't know if they had to adjust anything. They just had to play better.
Their defense has played fantastic over the last couple of months. Yesterday only, they only gave up like 280 yards total, just 44 rushing, and scored a touchdown. Yeah, the Chiefs defense has really come alive.
And my preseason bust of the year is out of the playoffs, Zach Wilson.
Well, he's a Jet.
Why do they draft him? Does it matter? It's just whoever's on the Jets.
I'm afraid that might be
a bust. Is going to be labeled a bust. Is it too early to label him a bust?
Yes, it's too early.
I'm going to go ahead and label him that. Never saw
it's a tough place to go, I can tell you that.
Yes, it
butt
is.
Fumble. Ever since the butt fumble by Sanchez, it's been a bad deal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered early.